and gentlemen, let's go. Let's go. We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go. Let's go. You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the zone.
The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
I'm at a Tuesday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels. We head up until 2 o'clock. The next 4 hours, we've got you. A lot of stuff to get into and talk about today. We certainly have college basketball on the docket. We'll talk about last night, the fallout, or at least the takeaway, what we learned from the national championship and UConn winning yet another national title, number 6 for their university, number 2 for Dan Hurley, and multiple coaches at UConn that have won multiple national titles. We'll talk about what it means there for UConn, what it means for college basketball, what we witnessed, how rare it is, what we witnessed, and why maybe we're seeing a trend over the last 6-7 years. We'll talk about that trend, what that is, and it goes along a little bit with what UConn is doing. 913-912-4810. We'll talk some Royals baseball as well as they get set for a big series against the Astros. I talked yesterday with Josh Kaiser about how, you know, the Astros have been struggling, sitting 3-7. They had just won the game on Sunday Night Baseball, but they look disinterested at times, and then they go out and play a really good game yesterday against the Rangers last night. And now they've won back-to-back games, so it's not like you're getting a limping into Kauffman Houston Astros team. So it'll be a good series, hopefully. Christian Javier on the mound tonight against Cole Reagans, the ace going to the mound to get things started for the Royals, hopefully. So we'll talk some Royals baseball today. Les Norman will be our guest coming up at noon, breaking the norm. We'll talk some Royals with him, what he's seen through the first 10 games of this season. Small sample size, very early. Take a drink, everybody. And we'll talk to it. Thank you, Sterling. Take a drink, take a shot, whatever you want to do. Small sample size so far throughout the season. And we'll talk with Les Norman about what he's seeing, what's optimism, what maybe is a concern right now for this team moving forward. That comes up at noon. But before that, we'll talk some NFL football. We'll talk with Adam Teicher today from ESPN. He's presented by Twin Peaks. We will hang out with Adam for the 11 o'clock hour and get his thoughts on what's going on with the Chiefs and Mike Dana. Re-signing with the Chiefs, Clyde Edwards-Helaire introduced yesterday, reintroduced. allow myself to introduce myself. He had a press conference yesterday, the Zoom press conference, as he signed a one-year deal to return to the Chiefs. And, boy, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was, he elaborated a lot on a lot of the answers. It was the opposite of what you would get from L'Jarius Sneed in some press conference questions and answers. L'Jarius Sneed, usually quick to the point and not necessarily long-winded, which I have no idea how you could be that. I'm not sure. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire was very forthright and coming, coming to grips, I guess you would call it, or as he said, call a spade on where his career was and him being in the situation from being a first-round draft pick to is anybody going to sign him after his rookie deal and returning to the Chiefs. So there were some interesting things from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We'll talk with Adam Teicher. He was on the Zoom press conference yesterday with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So we'll talk with Adam Teicher about that. Obviously, as I mentioned, Mike Dana returning. We'll hear from Mike Dana eventually. He'll have a Zoom press conference as well. They typically do that with the guys that they're signing and guys they're bringing back. So we'll talk with Adam Teicher about that. Some other things as we're getting closer, just a couple of weeks away from the NFL draft, 2 weeks from Thursday, when we'll be seeing the Chiefs and the NFL drafting and who everybody is going to take and the fallout from that. 913-912-4810. We will also present the bracket of sound winner, the soundbite that won. We'll eliminate the other three teams that made it to the Final Four and play the bracket of sound winner We have yet another winner, UConn representing that sound in back-to-back years. 913-912-4810. We also have the winners in the bracket challenge at 810-WHB and the zone group in the bracket challenge. And I just want to give a standing ovation for the man behind the glass, Dylan Michaels. Thank you, Sterling. An actual standing ovation. He can give himself a round of applause. Give yourself a hand, Dylan. Give yourself a hand. Give yourself two of them if you want to, because you got a lot of buttons to push back there. Congratulations. Well done, Dylan. Do you know even what we're talking about?
No clue.
Okay, very good. In our zone group at 810WHB.com, Dylan finished third out of the 300 some odd brackets that were submitted.
Strong.
Dylan, that shows you that you can know absolutely nothing and still succeed at this.
Dylan was the highest finisher of all of the 810 on-air staff that submitted of 810, not just in our group, but just the, you know, 4,000, 5,000 brackets, whatever it was, that were submitted at 810WHB.com. Dylan, the highest finisher, finished 65th.
And he did it all on mascots.
He did it.
It was all mascots. It was a husky.
He only did it with coaches that had beards, which was odd that he chose Dan Hurley and UConn to win.
Bald.
There it was. Yep, bald. Yeah. It was a 50-50 shot to get that right, and I chose poorly. You chose poorly. Nice job, Jason. But bald coaches, and that's why you had Dan Hurley beating Matt Painter. So good job. But finishing third in our zone group, the bracket challenge finished. So we'll announce those winners as well, or people can just go to 810WHB.com and check that out. But if you're not in the group, then you can't see who won in that particular zone group. So, but yeah, congratulations to Dylan finishing third. I told everybody last place was already occupied, and I don't even know if I finished last. That was pretty bad.
I don't get steak knives.
You get no steak knives.
I don't want third.
You get no steak knives. You're fired. Third place is you're fired. Sorry about that, Dylan. Well, you know, it goes right along with the theme we talked about yesterday, introducing Sterling and bringing on Jack Johnson. And people wondering, well, how long till Dylan's gone? Well, you know what? Third place, you're fired, okay? Second place, set of steak knives. Our winner got a Cadillac Eldorado. I don't think that's what the winner got, but we'll
El Camino, I think, is what you were looking for.
I thought it was a Cadillac.
No, you're right.
Eldorado?
I was being a smart
Okay,
ass.
Thank you. Yes. I'm like, I'm pretty sure. I know my Glengarry Glen Ross. You know, put the coffee down there, Sterling, okay? Coffee's for closers.
I mean, this water does taste an awful lot like vodka.
Put the water down. Water is for closers. All right, let's get into the show. 913-912-4810. UConn wins the national championship, and I think 25% of all the brackets at ESPN had UConn winning, which, you know, that's actually a pretty decent number for, you know, a quarter of all of the, like, millions and millions and millions of brackets had UConn winning. They were the favorites, and they capped off the most dominant run in NCAA tournament history in back-to-back years. Something we've never seen before. We've seen it on an individual season. We've seen it when a team has had a crazy dominant run through the six games. North Carolina in 2009 was incredibly dominant, just punking teams. Villanova in 2018, dominant, punking teams. We've seen that before, and we've seen a back-to-back champion before, most recently Florida. But what we haven't seen is a team this dominant with a back-to-back champion while having to replace four of their top seven players after winning the first championship.
Yeah.
Replacing the most outstanding player from the Final Four last year. Replacing their second-best player on that team last year. Replacing three starters and their two top reserves from last year. In fact, you can say four of the top six if you want to. I was just looking at everybody that played at least 10 minutes in the national championship game against San Diego State, and Donovan Klingon played 10 minutes against San Diego State last year as a freshman. He was lightly used because Sanogo was a stud. And, you know, other players on that team, studs, Andre Jackson, Jordan Hawkins, and then you've got Sanogo, and then, of course, Tristan Newton and Alex Caraban. Caraban as a freshman, and Tristan Newton as a senior then, but, you know, getting an extra year, COVID year, and all that stuff, returning this year. But you had to replace Nyheim Allen and Joey Calcaterra. You had to replace those guys on the bench. You had to replace Sanogo and Hawkins and Jackson. You had to find replacements for three of your starters. Four of your top six players had to fill in and fill in those roles while still being, as check that, more dominant through the tournament this year than they were last year. It's something we've never seen before.
This is absurd. Imagine you said going into this game, Zach Edey goes for 37-10 and Purdue only has 9 turnovers. Not only that, we'll say UConn shoots 6 of 22 from 3.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Close one, right?
Yeah. Not only a close one, I really liked my dumbass pick of Purdue to cover when it's like nobody has covered. Nobody has covered against UConn.
Dylan.
And Mick.
Dylan and I, we knew.
And Dylan had UConn, right?
Yes, it was inevitable.
Mick and I were dumb and had Purdue. Typically, Dylan goes with whatever Mick says, so that was weird that you went against Mick. Now we know who the smart one is. It's Dylan. He also finished third in our bracket challenge. I should have had Dylan go first to see who he had and then follow his lead, but I really thought this was going to be a closer game. But what I should have known is that a close game for UConn is not within 7.
This is why I had UConn picked as the champion before. I was like, well, it's obvious. I go, well, it's obvious because it's right. They're clear-cut the best team, and what is so impressive to me, it's not just the top-end talent. It's the depth. It's the fact that they beat you so many different ways. The defensive game plan they had was just phenomenal. And then offensively, it's, again, I don't want to take anything away from Zach Edey in college, but it's why he's going to struggle in the NBA. They just attacked him time and time again with the guards, with Newton, with Castle, with Cam Spencer driving in and either the lobs, or if he doesn't come and he tries to stay back on Klingon, it's just an easy little six-footer.
Yeah.
And they just completely took Edey out of the game, took away what he can do defensively. UConn's game plan and their ability offensively to get any shot they want. And I thought something was fairly interesting here. They're not just running pick and rolls. Like, how many offenses in college basketball is predicated on one guy or two guys running a pick and roll? UConn is running sets.
The action is just beautiful.
It's just, they get any shot they want. And that's what's so spectacular to me is, it's not just one or two guys. It's 7 deep, and they will find ways to beat you with the depth.
The scoring margin for UConn, they were plus 140 in this run. Kentucky in 1996 was the most recent one, and that team was littered with NBA players. That 1996 team was just so good and so talented. They had the most at 129 points margin. UConn also beat them by 11. Everything's double digits. They didn't just beat them because Villanova in 2016 was plus 124. Or 2018. Duke in 1999 was plus 123. So you had 129, 124, 123, you know, closer. And then UConn comes over the top and is plus 140. Again, double digits. Everything is by double digits for UConn. It's absurd. And the average margin of victory this year, the highest margin of victory, UConn, 23.3 points. Their margin of victory through the 6 games. Topping North Carolina in 2009, that was 20.2. They beat them by 3 points per game, North Carolina, in margin of victory. The third place team in margin of victory in the NCAA tournament history, the third place team. Do you know who the third highest margin of victory in the tournament is? So number one was this year, UConn. Number two was North Carolina in 2009. Number three, any guesses, Sterling and Dylan?
I would say UConn last year.
UConn last year at 20 points per game, 0.2 behind North Carolina at 20.2. They have two of the top three largest margin of victory scoring margins in the tournament history, and they've done it in back-to-back years, replacing four of their top six players.
Historically speaking as well, guess where UConn ranks in men's college basketball championships?
Third now.
They are tied for third with North Carolina. They're behind UCLA, Kentucky. They're ahead of Duke, Indiana.
I was going to say, they just passed Duke and Indiana last night.
Two ahead of Kansas. For all the people that say UConn is not a blue blood, what more do they have to prove?
Oh,
what more
you.
Do they have to do?
I'm with you. They're absolutely a blue blood.
They are a blue blood. And what's so impressive, they're doing this in Connecticut.
Stores, Connecticut.
You are in between New York and Philly and all these major cities. How are you doing this in Stores, Connecticut?
Yeah.
I've been to Stores. I've been there. You're in the woods. There's nothing there. You're not in New York. You're not in these big cities. You're not, okay, it's the Northeast. You are fighting with major cities for players. Now, you can say maybe that helps you that you get some of the guys from New York, maybe you get some of the guys from Philly to come up there. But what's so impressive to me is, you're right, we talked about it yesterday. They've done it with multiple coaches now. It's not just Gonzaga with Mark Few. It's not just Baylor getting turned around with Scott Drew. They have built a powerhouse in the middle of the woods. They have two bars. Two bars. I've been there. There's like not even a downtown. It's mind-blowing to me that UConn has created this spectacle, this incredible dominance. This, again, they are now a blue blood where they are at.
From 1901 until Jim Calhoun in 1987, they made it out of the first round of the tournament. 1, 2, 3, 4 times in their history. Made it out of the first round of the tournament. Four times from 1901 to 1987. Made it out of the first round. And since 1999, they've won six. Three for Jim Calhoun, one for Kevin Ollie. And the program's so good that Kevin Ollie got a national championship. All right? That's how good the program is that Kevin Ollie somehow got a national title, which was a, you know, great run and all of that stuff in 2014, which is one of the, you know, if you want to call it, like, worst teams or whatever. They were 32-8 that year was UConn. But still, it didn't look like a national championship team on the outside looking in, even though it ended up being that. And they had, you know, Shabazz Napier and Jeremy Lamb, and they had a couple of players on that team. 2011 was Kimball Walker with the five wins in 5 days in the Big East tournament.
I was thinking Muhammad, too. When was Shabazz Muhammad? Did he never get one?
I don't when was he?
That was 13.
It was 2013, yeah. Yeah, but 2014, Napier and Jeremy Lamb and that team, and they beat Kentucky in the national title game. That was an 8 seed. That was the Kentucky team that was an 8 seed that was put against Wichita State in the second round. Wichita State was undefeated. It's like, hey, Wichita State, you're undefeated. Hey, your second round game is against this team that's going to have four lottery picks on it. But no, don't worry. They're an 8 seed because they've underachieved this year. But they got four lottery picks on it. Go get them.
And they'll be undefeated throughout the entirety of next season as well.
And they just won the SEC championship. They just won the SEC tournament, and they're an 8 seed. So congrats going 32-0, Wichita State. Here you go. And that team ended up playing for a national title, that UK team did. But from where they were before Jim Calhoun to now, I mean, you're just creating something almost out of thin air. Creating something almost to where, oh, they've been around, they've played. It's not like they started, it's not Grand Canyon when Dan Marley started the program like 10 years ago or whatever. Like, they've been around, they've played basketball games going back to 1901. But they didn't really do anything until Jim Calhoun got there. And then, you know, 12 years later, he wins a national title and going to Final Fours and Final Fours. Like, the amazing thing about Jim Calhoun is that he's the opposite of Tom Izzo. Is that Tom Izzo goes to a lot of Final Fours and he's only won one. Jim Calhoun went to 4 Final Fours and won 3 of them. His view was, if you're there, you might as well win it. Tom Izzo was Patrick Mahomes. Yes. Tom Izzo was, we won 4 games? Hell yeah, regional championship. We have more games to play? Since when? We just won our 2 back-to-back tournaments in 2 weeks. We got to play another weekend? What in the actual heck is going on here?
Izzo's LeBron James. It's LeBron. We'll get there, but, you know.
I got to the finals. What more? I dragged this team to the finals. What more do you want from me? I got to go play more games? Oh, that seems like a lot.
Cancun looks pretty nice.
Calhoun's like, well, we're here. We might as well win it while we're here. And that's what he did, except for one, and that was the freshman Kimball Walker and Hasheem Tabeet and who else was on that team, scoring guard. But regardless, that was a good team as well. They just did not win it that particular year. But it's just been unbelievable. And one of the things I want to talk about on the other side of the break is the trend that's going on. And maybe the trend is skewed by UConn, and it probably is skewed by UConn. But here's the trend: see if you notice something in the top 7 margin of victory teams. Number 1, UConn this year. Number 2, North Carolina 09. Number 3, UConn last year. Number 4, Villanova 2018. Number 5 and 6 back to back with Florida 06-07, and number 7 Baylor in 21. So think about those. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, and we'll talk about maybe a trend that's happening in college basketball when we're seeing the dominance and the margin of victory. And I do want to explore maybe why that is. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More Zone next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels. We had up until 2 o'clock. We'll talk with Adam Teicher at 11 o'clock from ESPN, Chiefs Insider. Get his thoughts on Mike Dana, some other things with the Kansas City Chiefs. We're a couple of weeks away and 2 days, so that means a quick little math. Divide by the remainder. Carry the 1, second power, 16 days away from the NFL draft on that Thursday. 913-912-4810. So I said the margin of victory that we've seen, the top 7 average margin of victories in the NCAA tournament. UConn this year, number 1. North Carolina in 2009, number 2. UConn last year, number 3. Nova in 18, number 4. Back-to-back Florida teams, 06-07, 5-6. And then Baylor in 2021, number 7. The trend I was talking about is 4 of those have come in the last 6 tournaments. Now, UConn sort of skews it by being 2 of those, but also 3 of the top 4 are in those last 6 tournaments. Because Villanova in 2018 and then UConn last year, UConn this year, the only one in between is North Carolina in 2009 as number 2. You've got Florida winning back-to-back in 05-06 and then Baylor. These dominant runs of all of the NCAA tournaments, we've seen some dominant runs. 4 of the top 7 in history have been in the last 6 tournaments because 2020 didn't happen. So it's, you know, 7 years, but 6 tournaments that we've seen have been there. I have a theory on what the trend is as to why maybe we're seeing it. I don't know if that's the reason or not. My theory is we have seen in that time frame new basketball. So in 06-07 with Florida, they returned everybody. But 06-07 Florida, in 2006, they were number 2 in effective field goal percentage, which is threes are worth more than twos. So it's not just field goal percentage, effective field goal percentage. You get a higher percentage for knocking down threes. Florida was number 2 in the nation in 2006, and they were number 1 in the nation in 2007. This UConn team was number 7 in the nation in effective field goal percentage. Villanova in 2018 was number 1. Baylor was number 7. The two outliers are North Carolina in 2009 was number 45 in effective field goal percentage, and UConn last year was number 33. But if you take it a step further, And you look at, you know, I like KenPom, and I know people look at the top 25 offense and defensive efficiency. Efficiency. There we go. Got it. Figured it out. I'll get there. Carry the one. Divide it. Third power efficiency.
Yeah. Yeah.
People look at pre-tournament as opposed to post-tournament. Like, post-tournament, it's like, well, look at all these champions now that we know what happened. Well, typically, if you win six games in a row, your efficiency in offense and defense is going to skyrocket. You know,
sure.
Because there have been Baylor in 2018, I think, entered the tournament in the 40s. In defensive efficiency. They ended up in the 20s, like 22. So, they're a top 25 team. So, if you would have gone before the tournament and said, well, I can't pick a team that's not in the top 25, so I can't pick Baylor, then you go back and go, well, Baylor was in the top 25, so that makes sense. It's pre-tournament, post-tournament. So, these are post-tournament numbers. But, while we look at effective field goal percentage, UConn this year was number one in offense. North Carolina in 2009 was number one in offense. UConn in last year was number three in offense. Villanova in 2018 was number one in offense. Florida in 06 was number three in offense. Florida in 07 was number one in offense. And Baylor in 2021 was number two in offensive efficiency. Some of that is effective field goal percentage. But even the outlier in North Carolina being 45th in effective field goal percentage, when you look at that team, it's amazing that they surrounded guys with Tyler Hansbrough in the middle, but then they surrounded him with guys that shot over 100 threes. Ty Lawson made 47% of his threes from behind the arc.
Yeah.
Wayne Ellington shot 42%. Danny Green shot 42%. They all were taking 120 and 130 threes in the season with Hansbrough in the middle. They surrounded a big man with shooters before we sort of saw the new basketball with shooters and, you know, pace and space. They weren't exactly pace and space, but they had three shooters that can knock down 40% that had no problem taking a volume of, it wasn't 40% on 20, like Tyler Hansbrough shot 47% from three. He took 10, you know, or whatever it was. Like
That's bad math. I don't know. It can't be that.
He didn't take many over the course. I'd say he probably took about 25 over the course of the season if I looked at Hansbrough's numbers of how many threes he took. He took one every few games. He would like Klingon took one last night, right?
Sure.
He took a three last night. That was sort of Hansbrough. But that's the outlier in effective field goal percentage, but still number one in offense when they've got those shooters out there.
That's four NBA players, by the way.
Yeah.
And the worst was the best in college.
Yeah.
Hansbrough.
And now he's a pickleball player. You see that video?
Elite pickleball.
Did you see that video of Hansbrough, a pickleball player?
No, that's awesome.
He was just playing at his local, like, chicken and pickle, and somebody went up to him and was like, hey, it's Tyler Hansbrough, because, you know, it's a big guy. They started talking to him. He's like, well, you know, I picked it up a couple of years ago, and he's Tyler Hansbrough on the pickleball court like he was on the basketball court.
Psycho.
Oh! You know, and hitting the pickleball.
I would not want to play against Psycho T in pickleball. That is a guy who is going to try and somehow hurt you.
It wasn't even a tournament. It was just friends playing. He's like completely into it and sweating.
Two dudes I don't want to play on the pickleball court. Psycho T and Grayson Allen, because Grayson Allen, especially if it's your teammate,
he's
going to try and trip you.
Jump over the net to hit you with the paddle, whatever. That's the trend I see. I don't know if that's the reason, because why wouldn't other teams then be competing with them? Why are these teams winning by an average margin that size if they're doing something that we know other teams are trying to do?
My thought process was, I thought, wow, a lot of East Coast teams, which is no correlation, but I thought it was interesting. And my actual thought was a lot of guard play, a lot of one big man, four guards. Now, I know Caravan is listed as a forward for UConn.
He's
6'8", 220, yeah. But he's a stretch guy, right?
Yes.
Like, he shot six threes.
Yep. Only made one, right?
But you still have.
I know, because his line was over 1.5.
But like, even with North Carolina, you had, as you mentioned, your big man, four out. UConn, one in, four out. Villanova, what did they have? Basically five out. They were just the Baylor team was mostly guard play. To me, that's my main takeaway is a lot of these teams have majority guard forward teams. Most guards shoot threes. Mm-hmm. You play a little faster pace. You can spread the floor out more. And when you get hot, well, you're going to win by more. When you get hot with four guards, when you have four guys that can hit threes, typically. Well, you need two to get hot. If two guys are having an off game, that's fine. You have two more who can pick up the slack. That's my main thought process with Purdue. I know they've been a good shooting team all season long for the most part. When Zach Edey, the game plan was give him the ball and then he would try to pass out. Well, UConn was too good defensively. They weren't going to hit. They weren't getting any open looks. Purdue was never going to come back in that game. When they got down 9, I don't think anyone thought that, okay, this is going to be a tight one. It goes, this is over. Because they can't come back. When you have Baylor and Villanova and North Carolina, when you're surrounded with that many elite good shooters, you still have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
UConn, if they would have fallen down in this game, I think they would have had a chance.
Well, and they were looking at it and saying, you know, and it was great strategy by Danny Hurley in that, what did Fairleigh Dickinson do? And it's not just like, well, if you do this, you'll win. But Fairleigh Dickinson said, we'll let Zach Edey eat. We don't have anybody to guard Zach Edey.
Sure.
We're going to make sure nobody else beats us. And they were terrible in that game. Purdue was outside of Zach Edey. And what did Danny Hurley do last night? They weren't double teaming. They weren't coming down and really digging. They weren't doing some of those things. They were making sure nobody else beat them. And they play tenacious defense, okay? They are really good on the, and they're relentless. That's the word that I keep using for UConn. Is just relentless. They don't stop. If you show one sign, a couple of minutes of weakness, they will pounce on you and go for your throat, and it's over. And it's done.
It's such a good point, because when Edey was tired, because he doesn't come into the game. He came out for like 40 seconds.
Like 40 seconds.
But when he was tired and on the floor, what do? They attacked him hard.
Yeah.
They go, okay, we see him all of a sudden not trying to block this shot.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go directly into him. And that was such a smart plan. Offensively, the same thing. When they saw he was tired, they just attacked Edey nonstop. And by the way, as good as he was in this game, you might say 15 of 25, 60%, that's great. Well, for a big man who's shooting these four-footers, I think Klingon did a phenomenal job going straight up and down. He made life hard on Zach Edey.
And it allows UConn to say, we're going to shut down everybody else because we've got Klingon on the inside. We've got him, and we've also got five fouls with somebody else there, and he ended up fouling out as well. But it makes it a life a little bit easier when you've got, you know, 7-2, 280 to go against, you know, 7-3, 300. You know, you've got somebody at least that is comparable to Zach Edey, and it ain't easy. But also I think why Zach Edey got tired is he's not used to having a guy like that that he's got to fight against, his almost same size, his equal, to fight against, and getting pushed outside the lane, having those longer hook shots, not as easy to get over his left shoulder, also then having to defend that guy on the other end. You get a little tired there, as opposed to he never comes out of the game, and he also doesn't play against guys his size, and he can typically get to a spot a little bit easier than what Klingon was allowing him to get to.
And you have to come out at least a little bit on Klingon. Again, not a great three-point shooter, but he keeps you honest out there. And I do think it comes down to Zach Edey getting tired. I mean, early on in that game, he was feasting. The hook shots were great. He was getting to his spot. He was getting down low. And as the game progressed, he couldn't get there anymore.
It's interesting because, like, in the first half, I'm watching the game, and I'm not immediately looking at the score every single time. I'm just watching the game and enjoying it, right?
Yeah.
And if you took the score bug away, like we used to have in college basketball, if you took the score bug away, about 8 minutes to go in the first half, I would have told you Purdue was up by like 7 or 8.
Yes.
Because I'm watching the game and I'm like, man, Purdue's playing really well right now. Purdue's playing pretty good. Braden Smith is on fire. He's grabbing boards, defending. He's knocking down shots. Zach Edey is getting fouls on some guys, you know, hitting free throws, hitting that hook shot. You know, Purdue is playing some pretty good basketball. But when you look down, they were either trailing or even with UConn the entire time. And it's like it never felt like UConn was playing all that well. It felt like Purdue was playing at a high level. Like, wow, Purdue's bringing it tonight. They are here. And that's the question when we get into of, can somebody compete with UConn? That was the question I was asking at the Final Four. Can somebody compete with UConn? And the answer is yes, with a caveat. For a spell in a game, teams can compete. But, Pat, go ahead.
No, I thought the exact same thing, Jason. It was hilarious. I go, Purdue's probably up 4 right now. They're down 4. And you're looking at UConn, and they were doing nothing special. It wasn't like they were hitting a ton of threes. It wasn't Jack Golke out there. Mm-hmm. As all of a sudden, you're like, oh, wow, this is noticeable.
Yeah.
It was a lot of 6-footers, 8-footers, just getting to the rim, smart offense. And then you look and you break down. I know this is not great analysis, but again, it goes back to how balanced they are. 6 rebounds, 5 rebounds, 5 rebounds, 5 rebounds, 8 rebounds. That's the starters. The assists, 4-1-3-7-2. Everyone getting involved. Everyone passing. No one being selfish. Look at the points. 5, 11, 15, 20, 11, then off the bench, 9. They're just so balanced. And they're not selfish. The assist numbers, the rebound numbers, no one cares. The rebounds goes to boxing out because Klingon has to do a great job boxing out on Edie, so that means everyone else has to step up and crash.
And you got to work. You got to attack the board, too. You got to work hard, put yourself in position, and then go get it.
Cam Spencer, the guard, had 8.
Yeah.
Newton
yep.
had 5. Castle had 5. I mean, Carabin had 6. It's just like they work so well as a team. They're so unselfish. It's like the Spurs, if you want to go to the NBA back in the day with like Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. They didn't have necessarily the superstar. I mean, Tim Duncan probably would have been considered a superstar, but they're so unselfish. They move the ball and no one cares about getting 30 or 35 points. No one cares about getting 12 rebounds. No one cares about leading the team in assists. That's what UConn is.
The stat from Pat Forty put this out last night. This is absurd. Did you see the stat about trailing in the second half, Dylan Sterling? Okay. They've played 12 games in the tournament the last 2 years. 12 games in the tournament. They have trailed in the second half in those 12 games a combined 53 seconds. They have played 4 games in the Final Four the last 2 years, and they have trailed by 53 seconds. And here are those games they've trailed in. The first of the 12 games against Iona, last year as the 116, they trailed for 15 seconds in the second half. The other game was the second round game last year against St. Mary's in the round of 32. They trailed for 38 seconds, which means 10 consecutive games they have trailed for 0 seconds in the second half. 10 consecutive, they have trailed 0 seconds in the second half in the last 10 tournament games, which also includes those 4 games that are played in the national semifinal and the championship game at the Final Four the last couple of years.
The anti-Chiefs. It's like the Chiefs are like, we want to get behind. We want to be behind in the second half.
We got to make it fun. We got to make it entertaining. You know, I do this for ratings, as Patrick Mahomes said at the match last year. You know, I do this. You know, I'm here to make it entertaining. I'm here to make it fun. UConn's not. UConn's there to take your throat, kill you, and put Danny Hurley's son out there on the court to end the game.
Well, they are Huskies. they do go for the throat.
That's exactly right. You know, that's they literally do that. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this hour. Danny Hurley was asked about the Kentucky job, not the UConn job, but the UK job, and he had a funny response. We'll do that next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. There is an assumed job opening in Lexington with Kentucky. Assuming John Calipari goes to Arkansas. I think there's something going on as to why it hasn't been announced yet. They were finalizing a contract yesterday. It's almost 24 hours later. Still no news. Not saying, just saying. He met with his players yesterday, and no news coming out of the meeting of Calipari's 100% taking the Arkansas job. All we have is that Calipari's heading to Arkansas. They're working on contract negotiations. They're finalizing a contract. So that job is assumed to be open. Dan Hurley, last question, as it's supposed to be done in the press conference, last question was asked about the job opening at UK and his comments about, you know, being back at UConn and all this stuff is, does that mean that you are definitely returning to UConn next year?
Conversations with anybody else that might have a job coming open tomorrow. Yeah. I don't think that's a concern. You know, my wife, you should have her answer that.
We can maybe arrange a press conference for Mrs. Hurley in the morning. Congratulations, Coach.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, she'll answer that question better than I can. Yeah.
Then he walked off the stage. After getting off the stage, he was then asked, can you elaborate on that? There's no sound of it. It's some of the writers. He said about what his wife might say at a press conference, said, we just went to Rhode Island, which I had to drag her to, and then to Connecticut. I got her closer to New Jersey. I can't afford a divorce right now. I just started making money. People don't think about the family aspect, but his wife ain't leaving UConn anytime soon.